Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, April 21st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the Senate passes a preemption bill and a feud at the Capitol over environmental research. Legislation that would roll back sick leave ordinances in Minneapolis and St. Paul has cleared the Minnesota Senate. The bill would also stop cities from setting the local minimum wage higher than the state level. Brian Baxt has the story.
Arriving for their debate, senators had to weave through a throng of protesters who were waving signs and chanting in opposition.
No exception! No exception!
The legislation is called preemption because the state would be restricting what could be done down the government food chain. In this case, it's about labor regulations, minimum pay, time off entitlements, and scheduling rules. The measure supporters say it's about setting uniform standards statewide so businesses don't get caught up in a bureaucratic thicket. Republican Senator Jeremy Miller of Winona is the bill's sponsor. He says with 853 cities in Minnesota, allowing each to draw up its own labor regulations would be a big burden on businesses.
I believe we're protecting local control with this bill because we're protecting the relationship between employers and employees. And when it comes to wages, benefits, and salaries, that's best negotiated between the employers and the employees.
The debate came on a day when state officials announced Minnesota's unemployment rate fell to 3.8% for March. Miller says a strong job market leaves employers with little choice but to sweeten the pot.
In fact, there are more job openings than there are people to fill those jobs. So naturally, wages and benefits are rising because if employers want to fill those positions, they have to offer competitive wages and competitive benefits, otherwise they're not going to fill those positions.
It's more than an academic exercise. Frustrated by a lack of action at the state and federal level, advocates for higher workplace standards have been taking their case to City Hall. Minneapolis leaders adopted a policy last year requiring all but tiny employers to let workers accrue an hour of paid sick leave for every 30 hours they work, capped at 48 hours for the year. St. Paul officials ratified a similar ordinance, though without a carve-out for businesses with fewer than five employees. Both would apply starting in July. Duluth is weighing a policy of its own, but the bill at the Capitol would block any such ordinances and make the ban retroactive to January 2016.
And now, in the name of a disguise called uniformity, the state wants to ambush this effort.
Senator Bobby Joe Champion of Minneapolis was the first in a parade of Democrats to slam the bill. They criticized Republicans as intruding on local governance, and they said it would strip meaningful benefits from lower-income workers just as they were about to kick in. 27-year-old Eli Edelson Stein is among those who would be affected. He's a server in a South Minneapolis restaurant, and he's worked in the restaurant industry since he was 17. He says he was looking forward to finally gaining a sick leave bank.
Basically, there are times when I'm faced with this moment of like, do I not go to work and make it harder to pay the bills? Or do I come in when I'm a little bit sick and deal with people's food?
Business owners have been vocal in the debate over the past few months as well. Mike Hickey is state director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Aside from the sick leave ordinances, Hickey says his members are worried about proposals for a $15 minimum wage taking hold in the Twin Cities and spreading into regional centers.
Everybody wants to provide a nice benefit to their workers, but a small little 2-3-person business in the first or second month of their lifetime, can they really deal with this? They're looking at a 50% failure rate in the first year, and so the challenges are really immense.
The Senate passed the bill on a 35-31 vote, with DFLer Dan Sparks of Austin joining all Republicans. It has slight technical differences from the one the House passed in early March. It's not clear what DFL Governor Mark Dayton will do once a bill reaches him. Dayton says he has considerable reservations, but doesn't want to announce his intentions before seeing the final version. No matter what, he'll be under heavy pressure from both sides. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
Tomorrow, around the country, people are scheduled to take part in what they call a March for Science. It's prompted by what organizers worry is a growing threat to making public policy based on sound, evidence-based research. One of the many companion rallies around the country will happen in St. Paul at the state capitol, where a feud has broken out over funding for environmental research and related initiatives. Dan Gunderson reports.
This particular dispute has its roots in something called the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. It's a 17-member panel that recommends how the state should spend tens of millions of dollars that go from the state lottery to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund.
It takes me over 60 hours to read the proposal.
Jeff Broberg is citizen co-chair of the commission.
And I sit through 15 days of meetings to vet them out, and I work pretty hard to sort out the wheat from the chaff.
Like most of the other citizen members of the commission, Broberg has a background in science. He's a licensed geologist and works as an environmental consultant. So he chafes at what he sees as an anti-science bent to some of the changes the Republican-controlled House made to the commission's recommendations. Gone was funding for research on climate change and renewable energy, as well as money to study water quality, wild rice, and wolves. Broberg said it seemed designed to send a message.
Some pernicious notion that the science isn't valid, we shouldn't listen to experts, the citizen involvement is not legitimate, and that we're legislators and we have election certificates, so we're going to do whatever we want.
State Representative Josh Heinzman was in charge of evaluating the commission's proposals. The Nisswa Republican denies specific areas of research were targeted and says there were a variety of reasons for choosing projects to cut.
Things that might maybe have opportunities in future years or may have had some issues with committee members and maybe were somewhat controversial.
And Heinzman says those who criticize the legislature for changing the recommendations don't understand the process.
The legislature wasn't given a rubber stamp. They were given the opportunity to be a part of what is and isn't in the bill. There may have been previous legislatures that had a different take, but this is where we're at currently.
It's not the first time science and politics became entangled with environmental funding. In fact, the makeup of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources was changed in 2006 to include citizens. At the time, projects were selected by a commission of legislators, and Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty criticized the process as too political. It's not new for lawmakers to cut projects recommended by the commission, but former legislator and past commission member Steve Morse says lawmakers seem to be ignoring the advice of experts.
They're becoming more brazen, and it's happening to a larger degree. So, I'm not sure where it'll end up, but it's a very bad trend.
Representative Heinzman says the funding shifts are a matter of priority, not politics. Money from eliminated projects will go to fund the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. Under the CREP program, the federal government matches state funding to pay farmers not to till environmentally sensitive areas. Morse, who now heads the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, says it's admirable to spend money on the conservation program, but not at the expense of important research.
You know, some of these people don't want to spend it on climate. They don't want to spend it on hard science that is going to tell us things that maybe they really don't want to know. And so they're looking for other places to spend the money. They need a place to park it. And so I think the CREP is an easy place to park it. Everyone loves the CREP.
The funding cuts are not final. The Senate left the commission's recommendations largely intact, but Representative Heinzman says he expects many of the cuts to be accepted by the Senate when the bills are reconciled in conference committee. Covering the environment, Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
Race, policing, and officer-involved shootings still stir strong feelings in St. Paul. Those emotions were on display on the city's east side last night, not far from where a black man was shot and killed by police earlier this year. And at times, both community and city leaders expressed frustration at the divide that still remains between police and some city residents of color. Brent Williams filed this story.
Around 50 people gathered at the community forum at Progressive Baptist Church, which was organized to address concerns following the March 15th police shooting death of 29-year-old Cordell Quinn Handy. The shooting is still under investigation by the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. So St. Paul Police Chief Todd Axtell and Mayor Chris Coleman told the audience, made up of mostly African Americans, that they couldn't comment directly on the incident. Perhaps no one in the room was more frustrated about that than Kim Handy Jones, Cordell Handy's mother.
I still want answers.
Jones recently sued the officers who shot her son. She alleges that officers Miko Norman and Nathaniel Younts falsified their accounts of what happened when they encountered Handy outside an East Side apartment building. Police were responding to a domestic violence call. Jones' lawsuit also alleges that police department policies made it possible for the officers to commit misconduct without fear of being disciplined. She vowed to keep pushing investigators to release information about what happened.
Because if it was any one of you all's kids in here, you would want answers too. You would want the truth, and you want answers, and I want justice. And I will not stop till I get it.
Before Jones came to the meeting, Chief Axtell expressed a similar sentiment. He said someone asked him in a previous meeting what would he want if he found himself as a grieving parent.
But what I would want is the truth, and I'm telling you as your chief of police in St. Paul that I have full confidence, absolute full confidence, that we will be handed the truth.
Many people in the audience were not so confident. They blamed what they called a code of silence that discourages officers from coming forward with information that might get one of their fellow cops in trouble. Members of the audience also blamed the police unions for defending troubled officers and helping them get their jobs back after they get fired. And for some in the audience, the problem with police is that they don't do enough of the right kind of enforcement. Chantel Allen, a youth organizer in St. Paul, described what happened earlier this week after shots were fired at a Green Line stop near Dale and University. Allen was across the street from the site of the shooting, trying to get some young, excited kids out of the area when some officers drove up in a squad car.
Then a group of kids rode by saying they were going to spray the whole block. The police officers stopped, they got out, they looked down the block, they got back in their car and they vacated. I no longer saw them.
Allen said she could have used their help. She also said while it's good for police to participate in community engagement activities, police can't be the ones organizing the events.
Because, see, that's not a community event if you're just throwing it.
Right.
That's not what we need. You're still in control. You're still in control of the situation, and the people that really need that don't want to come be a part of it.
The police chief and the mayor sat quietly through most of the 2.5-hour meeting. However, towards the end of the night, Coleman pushed back.
He has been... Okay, you asked me to answer a question, and I'm answering a question.
Coleman explained that the police department and the city were already working on many of the concerns raised during the meeting, from training officers to respond properly to people having mental health crises or getting police out of their cars to engage with members of the community.
We have sat here for 2 hours, and you've asked us to do stuff without context of everything that we were doing, including all of the work. You can't tell us that you want us to meet you in the community and then complain that we're having cookouts in parks for kids. That was not started by officers. That was started by community members.
Coleman, who is not running for re-election this fall, said he and the city will keep trying to do a better job to improve community relations. The meeting ended as it began, with a prayer from church pastor, the Reverend Dr. Earl Miller. He prayed for the Handy family. Miller also prayed for unity. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.